A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. So we're going to be talking about juvenile crime today. And frankly, the lack of consequences that we are seeing. And it's not just in one jurisdiction. It's not just in one state. Unfortunately, it's not even just happening in blue states. This has become a national problem. Although, I will say it does seem to be a little worse in those states with the soft-on-crime mentality that we're seeing from the left. We'll get to that in just a second. Before we do, though, let's talk about this for a moment. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it's no wonder the central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. Now, if you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree that physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. So I ran across this headline earlier today from New York. Exclusive footage shows five teens breaking into DeWitt cannabis and gun shops. Now, I've been writing at Bearing Arms for, gosh, months now about the number of these smash-and-grab burglaries that are taking place at gun shops across the country. And many times, this is just sort of anecdotal here, but it seems like majority of these cases involve teens driving a stolen car through the storefront of a gun shop, then running in, grabbing whatever they can, and then taking off. In this case, it doesn't look like a car was involved, but you still have an issue of young teens who are taking part in criminal activity with almost no consequences whatsoever. In this case, the TV station in Watertown, New York, WWTI, reporting on the five teenagers who were eventually transported to the police department following their arrest, according to the DeWitt police there in New York. Two 14-year-olds, two 16-year-olds, and one 17-year-old taken into custody. The teens matching the descriptions of individuals involved in a break-in, not just of a cannabis shop, but an hour earlier at a local gun shop called Shooter's Haven. One of the owners described the moment that she and her husband found out that their store had been broken into. She said, the video comes on. I see kids running out of the store, running through the store, running through the store and out the front door because the alarm system had gone off. She says that the shop had 16 dummy pistols that were stolen from the business. They also had a lot of damage done to their front door and display cases. In fact, over $7,000 worth of damage done in just a couple of minutes. She said, now here we are. Stuck replacing all of the merchandise. We lost a day's worth of business. Nothing to be done. This is crazy, she said. Now, what's really crazy is four out of the five teens who were arrested were released, supposedly because of their ages, raising concerns that the small business owners have about the level of consequences they are facing, according to WWTI in Watertown. The owner of the cannabis shop, a loud pack, Jonathan Maxim, said something has to be done. Is the consequences. It can't just be, okay, we're going to let you go. According to the DeWitt Police Department, all of the individuals charged with third-degree burglary, third-degree grand larceny, and second-degree criminal mischief. But here's the crazy thing. Supposedly, these teens, well, majority of these teens were released because of their age. But according to WWTI, two of the 16-year-olds and one of the 17-year-olds were released with an 8 p.m. curfew and were sent home that night. A 14-year-old was released to a parent and told to show up at family court later, and the other 14-year-old was sent to a juvenile detention center. So it was actually the older teens in this case who were sent home, and basically, you're not allowed to leave the house after 8 p.m. Okay, we were also not allowed to break into a gun shop. You're not allowed to break into a dispensary. So if they're willing to violate those laws, why do we think that an 8 p.m. curfew is going to resolve this issue? Now, I also ran across another story earlier today. In fact, I wrote about this at Bearing Arms. A tragic situation in Minneapolis over the weekend. You had four teenagers who were apparently joyriding in a stolen car when another car pulls up alongside them and opens fire. Police believe that juveniles also committed the shooting. But as it turns out, two of the teens who were shot, again in that stolen car, had been arrested and taken into custody by Minneapolis police just a couple of weeks ago, back on August the 9th. They, too, were essentially let go. And now you've got a war of words between the police chief in Minneapolis, the Hennepin County attorney, each pointing the finger at the other, basically saying, well, you're to blame for letting these teens go. Minneapolis Chief Brian O'Hara said early on Sunday that, quote, the police are doing everything we can in response to this, but said there needs to be tougher consequences for youth who commit crimes with stolen cars, saying that, again, two of the kids involved arrested less than 2 weeks ago. He said, we're failing to deter this behavior. With that being said, we're failing these kids as well. And Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty said tough consequences can't be the only solution. None of the children, she said, who were shot while riding in a stolen car over the weekend have been referred to our office by law enforcement for youth auto theft early intervention. We encourage the Metropolitan Police Department to collaborate with us to ensure that youth can have access to early and effective intervention. So, note, by the way, the specifics of what the county attorney said. Well, these kids may have been arrested, but the Minneapolis Police Department didn't refer these teens to our, what was it again? The youth auto theft early intervention program. And that may be true, because instead the police recommended that felony charges be filed against the teens. O'Hara said, our juvenile investigators referred two cases to the county attorney's office involving two of these individuals for felony charges on August the 9th. The kids weren't charged. They weren't diverted. And despite pleas from their parents begging for help, begging for them to be detained, they were let back out into the street, into the same environment to commit more crimes, which they did over the weekend. The Hennepin County Chiefs of Police Association also blasting the county prosecutor, saying, we hope that the Hennepin County attorney will work with law enforcement to hold criminals accountable, get youth the interventions they need, and work to prevent recidivism. Pointing fingers is unproductive and a disservice to our young people, our communities, and those who rightfully expect us to work together to solve these problems and prioritize the safety and well-being of our citizens. Now, in this particular case, again, it sounds like the local prosecutor, I don't want to say dropped the ball, but refused to prosecute these teens, right? Maybe what's fascinating to me is that the county attorney says, well, the police didn't recommend that they go into this early intervention program. I don't know if the police actually had to do that or if that was something that the DA or the prosecutor could have done on their own. Okay, thank you. We've taken these felony charges you presented to us, and instead of prosecuting these felony charges, we're instead going to divert these teens into this, intervention program. Now, personally, I don't think that would have been appropriate, but it would have been something, right? Because it sounds like in this case, you had two teens who were arrested in a stolen vehicle, maybe one behind the wheel of a stolen vehicle, and the prosecutor's office basically said, nah, we're not going to do anything at all about it. That is an issue. And again, we are seeing, supposedly the crime stats say that juvenile crime is going down. But the chief in Minneapolis says, while that may be the case, we're seeing a growing number of serious offenses committed by these juveniles. Whether it's, robberies, whether it's burglaries, whether it's shooting. You've got an 11-year-old in Nebraska who's been charged with murder of a 64-year-old man. He's one of, I believe, five teens and preteens who are accused of murder. And under Nebraska law, he can't be charged at all because he's too young. Now, in Minnesota earlier this year, there was a bill introduced that would have said juveniles could not be charged. In fact, adults could not be charged until they turned 21 because of their developing brains, right? They don't know right from wrong. Look, I won't say that I was the perfect teenager or the perfect child. I had my share of stupid things. But I knew, as dumb as I was, that murder was wrong. Robbery was wrong. Aggravated assault was wrong. raping somebody was wrong. These aren't things that you have to be 21 to learn. We know these things. And if we don't know these things by the time we're 10 or 11 years old, well, I would think after a first offense, you would find the bleep out, right? And instead, in states like New York and Minnesota, you've got Democrats like Kathy Hochul and Tim Walz who are more than happy to get tough on legal law-abiding gun owners, right? Well, let's stop 18-year-olds from being able to get a concealed carry license. Now, if somebody's illegally carrying a gun, we're not going to do anything with them, but we don't want that 18, 19, or 20-year-old to be able to lawfully carry a firearm, right? That's what Tim Walz did when he signed a bill that would have prohibited, well, that did prohibit under 21s from obtaining a carry license, a law, by the way, that has been struck down by the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. Kathy Hochul in New York, how much time do we have here to talk about all of the restrictions that she and New York Democrats have put on lawful gun owners while, again, turning a blind eye to juvenile crime? This is a huge issue, and it's something that, frankly, I don't think we're really wrestling with. We're not really grappling with. Sure, the idea of the juvenile justice system is rehabilitation, not incarceration. But if we're arresting teens, letting them go, and then 2 weeks later, or a week later, they're accused of more serious crimes, we're not rehabilitating them either, right? Which brings us to our recidivist report today. Actually, we'll get to that in just a second. But yeah, there is a theme here of juvenile justice and juvenile crime on today's show. We'll talk about that in just a second. But right now, with the volatility from the election, and our national debt just bringing $35 trillion for the first time ever, there has never been a better time than now to consider physical gold or silver as a way to protect your savings. If this election goes sideways, there's a good chance that things are going to get even worse. And the good news is that there's something you can do now ahead of whatever future chaos might be coming. Wealth Protection Research has found a gold partner in Sasco Gold that specializes in helping everyday Americans protect their retirement accounts like 401ks, IRAs, or TSPs using a loophole that allows them to convert into physical gold or silver tax and penalty free. You can find out more when you text the word TRUTH to 76626. You can break free from your captive retirement account. You can enjoy the peace of mind knowing that your retirement savings now stored in physical gold and silver that you control. If you're interested in learning the truth about how you can protect your retirement with gold and silver, you can get a free gold investment kit that explains it all from Sasco Gold just by texting TRUTH to 76626. Drew from Sasco, standing by, waiting to help. Just text TRUTH to 76626. Tell Drew that Cam sent you. And again, for your free gold investment kit, text TRUTH to 76626 now. All right, so today's recidivist report. Again, case in point. Now, this is not a blue state. This isn't Minnesota we're talking about. It's not New York State. This is Ruby Red, Ohio. The headline from the Vindicator newspaper in Youngstown, teen jailed following shoe shooting. 14-year-old faces attempted murder charge. This is a 14-year-old apparently tried to kill a, I think he was 12 years old, over a pair of shoes that happened last Sunday night. The 14-year-old, who has been named, he is being charged as an adult right now. Mackie Cotton is his name. He is in juvenile detention until his next hearing. And because he is 14, under Ohio law, he is subject to a mandatory binder to the adult level common pleas court so long as the judge finds probable cause that the boy committed the attempted murder and aggravated robbery. So, according to the Vindicator, the 14-year-old's accused of shooting this 12-year-old victim about 8:45 Sunday night in an attempt to steal the shoes that the 12-year-old was wearing. Captain Jason Simon of the Youngstown Police Detective Division said the shoes cost about $1,000, which, incidentally, just boggles my mind. I can't imagine, A, being 12 years old and my parents saying, yeah, you can have a $1,000 pair of shoes. I mean, it was, you've outgrown your shoes? Well, let's go down to Payless and see what they have on sale. That was my experience growing up, but regardless. Captain Simon said the 14-year-old wanted the shoes. He was going to take it by any means necessary. In this case, he shot at, injured the 12-year-old, didn't get the shoes, and then ran away from the scene. The alleged shooter identified during the investigation was arrested sometime later. And as the Vindicator reports, it is not the first time that the 14-year-old has been in trouble with the law. In fact, less than 3 months ago, He was also at the Martin P. Joyce Juvenile Justice Center as a result of being charged with several felonies and misdemeanors. On April 16th, the 14-year-old was charged with grand theft of a motor vehicle, felony assault, possessing criminal tools, all felonies. He's also charged with misdemeanor criminal trespass, disorderly conduct, two counts of resisting arrest, and one count of criminal damaging. There was a judgment entry that describes the outcome of the earlier case, but has not been finalized yet, according to the Vindicator. So the details on how the case were resolved, not available. But the court, according to officials, decided to release the 14-year-old from juvenile detention on August the 8th and place him on probation in that case. So, though we don't know all the details, we know the outcome, right? You've got multiple felonies, multiple misdemeanor charges for something that took place back in April. And just a few days ago, he was released on probation. Shortly thereafter, again, he is accused of illegally using a gun to shoot a 12-year-old to grab his shoes. Now, the Vindicator also reports that when this court hearing was over yesterday, the most recent court hearing, the 14-year-old's own mother walked past a reporter and said he should never have been released. Again, this is the 14-year-old's mom. As the Vindicator reports, the woman who declined to provide her name later told a reporter outside of the juvenile courthouse that Maki was in and out of the juvenile detention center three times during the course of the earlier criminal case, and she urged the judge to keep her son in juvenile detention rather than send him home or to a relative's house. But when he was placed on probation, she had to decide whether to have Maki placed with a family member and, quote, have him freely roaming the streets or take him home with me and try to have them come into the home and help out. I made the decision to let him come home. She said back in June and July, the juvenile court put him on house arrest, but there was no way to keep him at home. So she called probation officers in the juvenile court and they told her, call police. So she called police. She says they wouldn't pick him up. She says that her son has, quote, some major mental health issues. After his mental health was recently evaluated, there was an April 18th judgment entry from a magistrate stating that she had ordered a mental health and competency evaluation, but the teen was deemed to be competent to stand trial in juvenile court. Now, again, we've got multiple points of failure here, right? You've got a 14-year-old recently released from custody, now accused of shooting and trying to kill a 12-year-old over a pair of shoes. But it's not like the, you know, and listen, I don't know anything all about the mom. I don't know if she's a good mom, bad mom. I don't know. But based on what she said to the press, she knew that she could not keep control of her child, which is why she wanted her son in juvenile detention, because she thought that was the best place for him to be, the safest place for both him and the community. And instead, the juvenile justice system is intent on returning these kids back home or back to the streets as quickly as possible, even when the parents say, hey, I can't control him. I can't keep track of where he is. I can't lock him in the house because he could break out. So what do you do? I mean, at this point, if you're a parent and you've got an out of control child, I don't know that there is an answer. Mom says she called the probation office. Even though the kid was on probation, the probation office said, well, contact the police. Police said, we're not going to pick him up. Maybe they said contact the probation office. It's a catch 22. And until this individual or these individuals go on to commit more serious offenses and are arrested, the juvenile justice system seems to be turning a blind eye to these teens. And that, again, is a huge problem. So why are so many Democrats talking about our Second Amendment rights as a problem to be solved rather than focusing on these juvenile offenders, too young to legally possess a firearm, right, committing serious violent offenses and being spit right back out of the streets as quickly as possible? I guess attacking our fundamental right to self-defense is simply a bigger priority than ensuring that violent offenders face the consequences of their actions, including time behind bars. Now, today's Armed Citizen story from Arizona, where prosecutors cite self-defense and have said they will not be charging a man over a shooting in downtown Kingman, Arizona. We don't have a lot of details about this case, but the Mojave County Attorney's Office says it will not be charging anybody in the August 15th death of 51-year-old Tim Prentice, who died after being shot outside of the Sportsman's Lounge there in downtown Kingman. According to the, I think this is the Miner newspaper in Kingman, Arizona, there was a 25-year-old who apparently shot Prentice, Anthony Rodriguez. The men were involved in a verbal argument, according to Deputy Police Chief Joel Freed, but at one point that argument apparently escalated. Make sure I get the names here right. This was Chief Deputy Attorney James Shopman. Said Rodriguez was a passenger in a vehicle when he fired at Prentice, which ordinarily you would think, all right, so you're in a vehicle, you can get away, Prentice is outside the vehicle, maybe doesn't pose a legitimate threat. Self-defense? This is why I'd like to know the circumstances here. Shopman says that the attorney's office declined a shooting-related charge based on a review of evidence, including surveillance video and a claim of self-defense by Rodriguez. He said the ongoing investigation could change the posture of the case, but that Rodriguez right now is free of any charge associated with the shooting. So, again, I want to know more details here, but if the attorney there in Mojave County said, yeah, this guy was acting in self-defense, well, I'll take the attorney's office at their word, and then the question becomes, why was Mr. Rodriguez arrested in the first place? Hopefully we'll have more details and be able to bring that information to you in a future program. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Yes, back to our juvenile focus here, a teenager in Lonsdale, Minnesota, who was able to save the life of a coworker after the coworker suffered a medical emergency the other day. This was a scary situation. Grant Fritterer, working at his job at the Rail 19 Bar and Grill, this was back on August 12th, when he smelled something unusual in the kitchen. Maybe the smell of burning rubber, burning electronics. So he went out the back and saw that his coworker's car was on fire. And inside, his 25-year-old coworker, Jackson Pollock, not the painter, was unresponsive. Fitterer told Fox 9 this week, he was full of smoke. There was smoke all around it. I saw Jackson lying over the center console. He said this could have been so much worse than it was. According to the teen, his coworker had been feeling sick earlier, had gone outside to take a break, but then he began to experience a medical emergency. His car apparently was running, but it was in park. But when Pollock suffered that medical emergency, his foot hit the gas pedal. It stayed there. And eventually, the car caught on fire. So Grant Fitterer opened the car doors, helped clear off the smoke. He was able to shut off the car's engine. And then he and his coworkers had pulled Pollock from the car. Grant said at the time, I guess the flames were 10 to 15 feet above the car, just huge smoke clouds all up in the air. He said the car melted like a candle, fused into burned out holes in the pavement. And as somebody whose car has caught fire before, I can tell you, those things go up quickly, and it is very easy to panic when you see a vehicle engulfed in flames. So the fact that Grant Fitterer was able to respond so calmly and so quickly to take action to rescue his coworker, that's pretty amazing. His dad, Alan, says he saved a life last Monday, and it sounds like that was very much the case. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, Grant Fitterer in Lonsdale, Minnesota, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I am looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow. Fingers crossed, Missy is not feeling that great this week, so there is a slight chance that I will be away helping her deal with hospital and doctor stuff, but I am planning on being here tomorrow, and I hope that you will be here as well. In the meantime, please keep Missy in your thoughts and prayers. If you are the praying kind, I certainly do appreciate it. And make sure you check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Litigation, legislation, regulation, the culture war on gun ownership. It's all there for you at BearingArms.com. And if you like what you see, we have a fantastic sale going on right now for VIP and VIP Gold memberships. 60% off the going rate when you use the promo code FIGHT. 60% off your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content. You'll get an ad-free experience, but you'll also be supporting the Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at BearingArms.com. And in this day and age of big tech censorship and flagrant media bias, your support is more important than ever. So thank you again. I really do appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.